Welcome all. Chodesh Tov, yes. Chodesh Tammuz, almost. Chodesh Tammuz tomorrow. But it's still Rosh Chodesh today. Welcome everybody. If I could just remind you at the beginning to please turn off your phones so that we don't get any musical accompaniment to the shir. Our shirim of music we finished a few weeks ago, so this one doesn't need any music. It sings for itself. What I'd like to do for the next two sessions, I'm here this week. Please God, next week I'll be away. Next week, but the week after I should be back. So I want to do two one-off shiurim, and then we can start a mini-series on something else. Today I want to look at the mysterious case of the poison sandwich, which we'll talk about what that is in a few minutes. In 2 weeks I want to do something completely different, which is the troubling case of the accidental heretic, and whether a person can be an accidental heretic, an apikoris, by mistake, and how that impacts on halacha and hashkafa, and we'll see something from very different sources. But for today, we're looking at the poison sandwich. Some of you may be familiar with the case. For those who are not, it introduces us to a world of sources that we don't normally see. Some of them are absolutely fascinating, and I was very excited to discover this and excited to share it with you. I'm not the first person to deal with this. Much of the material is based on an excellent article by Rabbi J. Daly Bleich, which I've referenced at the end of the first source there. There's also a very good shiur online, YU Torah by Eli Reich from Shalvim. So this is not my chidushin, these are not my chidushin, but nevertheless I think the presentation that we're going to see is nevertheless really interesting. Let's use Rabbi Bleich's own words to introduce the case, because he says it very well. Some time ago, he writes, an incident occurred involving a socially inept American student who became the butt of his classmates' derisive behavior. Matters reached a point at which one of the tormentors regularly invaded the oppressed student's knapsack, stole the sandwich the latter had prepared for lunch, and proceeded to eat it himself. Endeavors to enlist the aid of fellow classmates in order to identify the thief or prevail upon him to put an end to the practice were of no avail. Finally, the victim, who excelled academically as a chemistry student, took matters into his own hands and proceeded one day to lace his sandwich with a poison. In the midst of an afternoon lecture, one of the members of the class became violently ill. In the course of the ensuing tumult, the victimized student revealed what he had done, explaining that he had resorted to poisoning the sandwich in order to establish the identity of the thief. Thereupon, the rightful owner of the sandwich administered an already prepared antidote to counter the effect of what otherwise would have been a lethal poison. Needless to say, this young man went from being a socially inept, victimized student to being the melech of the school, that he had the intuition and the innovation to do that. But the question is, was that legitimate? And many years later, one of the students, who was with this American kid in class, who by now had become an accomplished Israeli physician, was in a seminar conducted by Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein of Bnei Brak. Rav Zilberstein is an expert on medical ethics, and he raised this question with Rav Zilberstein, and he said, did this boy do the right thing? And Rav Zilberstein's response, which I wrote to you in Hebrew, is lo rak mutar, not only is this permitted, as mitzvah yesh badavar, but it is indeed actually a mitzvah. And he backs that up with a quote from Chazal, hal itehu l'rasha v'yamot, serve it up to the evil person and let him die. What does that mean? And how does that work? There ensued then a very vociferous debate between different correspondents, different rabbonim and poskim, most of whom disagreed with Rav Zilberstein and said, no, you can't just start taking the law into your own hands. Vigilante actions, we'll see some other cases. And many disagreed with him. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who was obviously a son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv, and also a brother-in-law of Rav Zilberstein, who was also son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv, he actually commented, he said Rav Zilberstein was correct. He thought it was a legitimate position. He says, Yesh makom le divrei gisi. He says, my brother-in-law's words have appropriate basis. And he said, indeed, another case which he commented upon Rav Kanievsky, where a thief had been breaking into a house, and the rope which the thief had been shimmying down was replaced surreptitiously with a weak one which would break, he said that was also legitimate. And of course, this gives rise to any number of cases. Rav Svi Schmitz, in number two, which I'm not going to read inside, who wrote an excellent set of svarim on choshen mishpat issues, on monetary issues, called Mishpatei HaTorah. He raises a case of an apartment building in Eretz Yisrael, which was being frequently burgled. And they realized that the burglar was going onto the roof. This is not an unusual situation in an apartment block. The burglar got onto the roof. He was able to jump down onto a balcony and from there to another balcony and break into people's homes. They worked out that the way he was jumping from his high roof is he was breaking his fall on the washing line. There was a washing line screwed into the wall. You know, there's the plastic white things outside there. There was a washer. He was breaking his fall on there and then going into the balcony. So what they did is they loosened the bolts on the washing line, okay, which was fine for the washing. But the minute the guy then broke in again and jumped on the washing line, he fell straight through and, of course, was found writhing and screaming on the floor at the bottom of the building. Again, was this legitimate or was that not legitimate? And a question was also raised, can you booby-trap your house in other ways? Someone else asked, can they dig pits and camouflage them in their property for people who are intruding so they'll become trapped, etc.? And in fact, this is a fascinating legal question in American law and English law as well. We'll get to the halacha in a minute. And obviously anyone who's been burgled, certainly people have been burgled on a frequent basis, feel that they really would like to do anything almost to stop these people doing that again. In English law and American law, this is prohibited. And Australia, I can't speak for Australian law, but Australian law, we have a representative there. You can't do this. I brought two small pieces, one from English. These are not authoritative legal terms. One is from the Daily Telegraph, and the other is from a website called Protect America. So please don't take this as being legal, the final word. But nevertheless, it helps, and it's actually quite informative. Number three, 1 million homes. This is from the Telegraph in the UK a few years ago. 1 million homes in Britain contain booby traps and snares designed to catch burglars. That's actually a lot of homes. Britain is not such a big place for 1 million homes to have booby traps, if that's true, according to a survey. 1 in 20 householders admitted that they've rigged devices to halt a burglar. However, the homeowners themselves risk jail, as it is illegal to set a trap to injure or kill an intruder. The figures from insurance firm Direct Line reveal measures people will go to protect their property. Common booby traps include holes in the floorboards, loose stairs, hidden tripwires. You shouldn't get any ideas from this shirt, okay? Garden pits, even plant pots or ornaments attached to hidden strings. According to the Crown Prosecution Service, a householder who, quotes, knew of an intended intruder and set a trap to hurt or kill them rather than involve the police would be acting with very excessive and gratuitous force and could be prosecuted. And we have to look at this question of excessive force. In extreme cases, some property owners who have been repeatedly burgled have illegally set traps involving nail bombs or shotguns. And people do have desperate situations. And in America, the situation is the same. You can read number four on your own. Again, it says they're clearly booby-trapping your house, producing toxic fumes and gas and all sorts of things, electrocuting people, spikes, nails, sharpened stakes, all sorts of things that people do is all illegal. Now, according to Rav Zilberstein, not only is it mutter, but there's a mitzvah to do this. And let's have a look at what he's basing this on, and whether we think, or other people think he's correct. There are a few halakhic areas that we need to deal with. First of all, let's look at the areas which support Rav Zilberstein's suggestion in halakha, and then let's look at some of them that might go against it. First of all, let's look at a Mishnah in Bava Kamma that talks about the following case. Number five. Hichnis peirosav lechatzer bal habayit shelo brishus. The case is this. Somebody has a load of food, produce, and they need somewhere to store it, and they never got permission, so they just put it in somebody else's yard without permission, all this food, let's say a big crate of tomatoes or whatever it is, in somebody else's yard. And then the animal of the balabais, who didn't even know the food was there, the animal eats the food. Patur, the balabais is exempt. He doesn't have to pay for the food. The guy put it there without permission. It got eaten. Not the balabais' fault. The im huskabahem. And what now if the animal is damaged by the food? All of a sudden it turns out this animal overate the food, or the food was not suitable for this animal. And then they came out, the balabais comes out and finds a dead donkey lying on the side of the chatzer because it's been eating this food which it didn't get on with it. Bal ha'peiros chayam. Then we'll see soon. My case that I just gave now is not exactly correct, but the balapeiros, the person who put the food there, has to pay for the donkey. Your food just caused the donkey to die. You have to pay for that. Ze'im hichnis brushos. But of course, if the person with the fruit or the produce brings it in with permission, then the balachatzah, the person who owns the courtyard, takes responsibility as a shomer, and then if his animals eat the produce, then obviously he is liable. But we're interested in the case of the dead donkey. The animal ate the food that was there, and then the animal was damaged. How does that work? Look at number 6. Hichnis perotav lechatzer balabai. So the Gemara comments as follows. I'm a rab. Lo shanu. When we said the following case, that if the donkey dies because of the food that was unlawfully put there, loy shanu ela shehuchlika behem, only if the donkey slipped or the animal slipped on the produce and fell over and hurt itself. Aval achla, but if the donkey ate it, patur, then the owner of the fruit is exempt. Why is the owner of the fruit exempt if the donkey ate it? My timer, what is the reason? Havala shalai taichol. Because the donkey had no business eating the food. So if the donkey ate the food, the owner of the food is not liable if the donkey is there. Sorry about the background noise. It'll go in a second. Probably some politician coming through. Then the donkey, the owner of the food is not liable. Again, if the donkey eats the food, even though the food was put there without permission, says the Gemara, nope, you don't have to pay for the donkey. The donkey had no business eating the food. So the Gemara says, I'm a Rav Sheshis. Rav Sheshis chimes in. I mean, I want to say that kinem v'shachiv rav amala hashmaisa, the rav must have been falling asleep when he said that, says the Gemara. How can that be? You put food there illegally, unlawfully, without permission. The donkey ate it. It turned out to be poisonous. The donkey died. You don't have to pay. Why? Who gave you the right to put food there and kill someone else's donkey, albeit unwillingly? The Tanya, and he brings an interesting case. Hanoisin sam hamavis, if somebody placed poison lifnei behemet chavero in front of somebody else's animal, they put down poison to stop someone else's animal, patur midine adam, they are exempt in the human court, v'chayiv bidine shamayim, but they're obligated in the heavenly court. And we see an interesting distinction here, that there may be things for which a person is technically exempt in Beis Din, but they're morally and ethically liable, and therefore they're responsible klapei Shamayim. What was his case? Someone who put poison down was exempt in the Beis Din, but obligated in the court of heaven. So the Gemara then analyzes, Sama mavet hu deloy avida da'achla. Now poison, which is not really edible, that's why they're not liable to pay in the Beis Din. Aval peiros da'avida da'achla. But peiros, which produce which is edible, you should have expected the donkey to eat it. B'deni adam nami mechayev, then he should be obligated in the Beis Din as well. Poison is less serious, in a sense, because why is an animal eating poison? But food, of course you're responsible. And then he goes through an analysis, and in the end it concludes, no. Food and poison actually have the same din, which is what? If you place food in front of someone else's animal, or indeed poison, in front of someone else's animal, and they eat it, and they die, then you are not liable in the human court, you are not liable in the Beis Din, but you are liable in the court of heaven. You are obligated morally and ethically, and Tosfos explains why. You're not liable here. Look in number 7. Havalei shaloi toichel. When we say this animal should not have eaten it, ein lefareish, says Tosfos, we do not explain the lekach poter. This is the reason why the owner of the food is exempt. The chashiv keruach she'ein matuya, because he shouldn't have expected the donkey to eat it. No! Of course he should expect. You stick food in somebody else's courtyard, people in those days had animals. You've got to expect that it might get eaten. It's not like a ruach she'ein matuya, which means it's a very unexpected wind or consequence. Elohainu time, it says, this is the reason why you don't have to pay in the Beis Din. Kevan she'ed mikavein mevi alav davar she'maziko. This animal, with intent, goes and eats this food, and someone else intervened, if you like. You didn't feed the animal the food, the animal approached it. We can't make you liable in the human court for that, because it was a groma. There was an indirect action. You didn't feed the food to the donkey. You placed the food there, albeit without permission. Another force came in. That's called groma, and you're not a groma, but nezikin potter. Usually speaking, when we have nezikin with liability in the Beis Din, a person is exempt if it's only an indirect cause, but you are liable in the court of heaven. And therefore the question remains for Rav Zilberstein, why wasn't this poisoner, maybe he wasn't obligated in Beis Din, If the person who was writhing on the floor had taken him to Basin and said, you have to pay my medical bills, maybe we'll say no. Groma ben Ezekin Pasa. But if he was indeed liable in the court of heaven, how can Rav Zilberstein say it was a mitzvah to do such a thing? And the idea of groma in Ezekin is well known. Look at number 8. The Rambam says very clearly, there is such a thing as indirect harm, which is treated differently in halacha. Kol ha-hoirek chaveru b'yado. Anyone who kills another person by hand, they're running through with a sword, or the evin, or with a stone, hamemisa, which is able to kill, or shechanko, or they strangle them, or shemeis, or the person at shemeis until they die, or sarf, or the esh, or they burn them. All these different ways a person might kill someone, God forbid. Hail v'hargu mikol makam, hu v'atzmoi, since they themselves killed them, harizei ne'erag v'beistin. Yes, they're punishable in beistin. It was a direct action. Aval ha-socher horek. But if you hire a hitman to get somebody, la'arog et chavero, to kill their friend, not such a chaver, but well, another person, or she'shalach avadav, or you send your servants, v'hargu, and they did the dirty work. Or shechafas chaveru v'nichu litnei ha'ari, or you tied the person up and left them in front of a lion. Or k'yotze b'avargato ha'chaya, and the wild animal ate them. Kol echad me'elo shofech damimhu. For sure you're a murderer. You can't hire the mafia to take out a hit job on somebody. You can't tie people up in front of wild animals. You're a murderer for sure. V'avon harigabi yado, you absolutely have the avera of murder in your hands. V'chayiv misa l'shamayim. And as far as heaven's concerned, you are chayiv misa. But the human court has no ability to intervene because it wasn't direct. So again, it's very clear in halacha, if you commit indirect damage to other people, whether it's monetary damage or whether it's property damage or whether it's physical personal injury, if it's not direct, then a person is not liable in Beis Din, but they are responsible in the heavenly court. So how did Rav Zilberstein and Rav Kanievsky answer this? When they put to them this case, look, the donkey, yes, okay, you're not obligated in Beis Din, but you are in Shamayim. Why is the case of the poison sandwich different? And Rav Zilberstein said three things. Number one, he said, first of all, the person who puts food in a yard without permission, the animals have every right to be there. So when the animal comes and eats that food, okay, you're not liable for technical reasons in the Beis Din. But of course you're liable morally, because what do you think is going to happen? The animals live there. You put your food in their yard. In the case of the poison sandwich, this is this guy's sandwich. This is his property. Nobody else has any business being in his backpack. Nobody else has any business jumping off the roof onto the washing lines. And therefore, he says, the very big difference in that case is that the burglar, or the person who's coming to the knapsack, he's intruding on you. You're not intruding on him. That's a very big difference. Secondly, an animal doesn't really know what it's doing. An animal sees food, it eats. There's a world of difference, says Rav Zilberstein, between an animal eating, even eating poison. I mean, let's face it, animals eat poison all the time. Rats eat rat poison. They're not very bright, okay? That's why they've got brains like rats, okay? I assume it tastes good to them. The point is, animals don't really know. Human beings should know better. He brings an example. If you put a sign in the front of your house, beware of the dog, and then somebody breaks in, ignores the sign, and gets bitten by the dog, you will not be liable. Of course you won't. You warn them, beware of the dog. Says Rav Zilberstein, there's a very big sign on the Torah, do not steal. Okay? That's big enough for someone to see. That's just like beware of the dog, and therefore if you ignore that, and you break into someone's house, and you fall through their washing line, then that's your choice. You chose to ignore the signs. And therefore Rav Zilberstein stuck by his guns and said that he felt that this particular source, the Grummer source, was not helpful, because even in the court of heaven, he feels that these people would not be liable in this way. That was the first argument. And in fact, Rav Zilberstein had two fascinating Gemaras. I'd never come across these Gemaras. One of them I'd heard, and the other one I'd never seen, in number 9 and number 10. Let's have a look at these two Gemaras that he brings. One is in Maseches Derech Eretz. Maseches Derech Eretz is a small Masechta, which you'll find at the end of Nezikin, together with a bunch of other, what they call the minor Masechtas. And it says as follows. Number 9, you might relate to this. La'olam yihyu kol bnei adam be'einecha kalistim. You should always regard other unknown people as potential thieves. V'havi mechavdan k'Rabban Gamliel, but you should honor them with the honor that is due to Rabban Gamliel, who was the Nasi. Maseb Rebbe Yeshua, there's a story of Rebbe Yeshua, shehichnis etzlo adam echad, someone came to stay with him, as a guest, as a house guest. Natan lo achila v'shtia. He gave him food, he gave him drink. Ve'elu l'gag, and he put him in a nice guest room up in the attic. But he didn't trust the guy, because he doesn't know who he is. So what did he do? Ve'natal et ha'sulam mitachtav. But he took away the ladder in the middle of the night from the attic, okay? Away from the attic. Ma'asa otaish. What did that fellow do? Amad b'chetzi halayla. Taka had Rabbi Shu was right to suspect him. He got up in the middle of the night. The natal kol kelav. He grabbed all of the valuables that were there. The karchan b'taliso. He wrapped them up in his cloak. The kevan shibikesh le'reid. And of course, he jumped down to come down. Nafal min hagag. He fell off the roof. The nishbru b'mepakto b'emenu. And he broke his neck on the floor. L'shacharis. Next morning, Barav Yeshua, Master Rav Yeshua got up and he found him on the floor in agony. Amaloi said to him, Reka, you low life, he said. Kach oisim bnei adam kemoischa. This is what happens to people like you. Amaloi, so the thief said to him, obviously he could still speak, I didn't know that you'd taken the ladder away. Like he's asking for clemency, mercy. Amalo, he said to him, Reka, you double low life. Didn't you realize that we suspected you yesterday? Mikan Amar Rabbi Yeshua, from there, you see Rabbi Yeshua said, La'olam yo kol b'nei adam b'einecha kalistim, you should regard everyone as a potential thief, for having mechavzon for Rabban Gamliel. But you should give them covered like Rabban Gamliel, but take precautions. Chavdehu v'chashdehu, Chazal said, give people honor, but be on guard. Now, what does that prove? He took the ladder away, the guy fell down and broke his neck. Does that mean, is that a proof for Rav Zilberstein? So will Rav Zilberstein want to say, yes it is. You see this man took, he booby-trapped his house, and he caught the thief. Others will see soon, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach rejects this. He says, that is not what's going on. He took the ladder away, not to help the guy break his neck, but to stop the guy taking away his kalim. He expected what's going to happen. The guy's going to pick up the kalim, look down and say, oi, there's no ladder. Okay, I'll rob someone else's house. He's not trying to injure the burglar. He's trying to stop the burglary. We'll see soon Rav Shlomo Zalman's analysis, but Rav Zilberstein wants to say this is a proof for him. Another story, number 10, that he brings as well. Number 10. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. This is slightly better known. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi. Have a ka'azli ba'urcha. They were going on the street. They were walking on their way. Rabbi Meir have a daig b'shma. Very interesting. Rabbi Meir used to bring inferences from people's names. He'd ask you, what's your name? You tell him the name, and he'd say, ooh, I can tell this is, it's a bit like graphology, whatever the equivalent with name is, names, nomology, I don't know what it is. And he would basically understand from your name what you're like. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Lai Avadaika B'Shema. But they didn't do this, the other rabbis, they weren't into this. Kimasala Hahu Duchta, they found a place. Ba'ushpiza, they needed an inn to stay overnight. Yavulahu, and they found an innkeeper who gave them lodgings. Amrulai. So they said to him, Mashmecha, what do they call you? What is your name? Amalahu, he said to them, Kidor, that's my name, Kidor. Amar, so Rabbi Meir said, Shma mina Adam Roshahu. I think the guy must be wicked. Shneemar, and he brings a pasuk, Kidor tahuchot heima. It is a generation of people who are upside down, turned over, perverse. So he said, Kidor, your name comes from that pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Ashlimu Leikisahu. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, they weren't into this. They gave their wallets into the safe in the hotel overnight. Rabbi Meir, Loi Ashlim, like I said, but Rabbi Meir kept his somewhere close by. Lemachar Omrullah, so the next day when they were checking out, they said, Havlan Kisan, give us our wallets back, please. Amalahu, so the innkeeper said to them, Loi Hadvarim Olam, I never took any wallets from you. I don't have your wallets. Now, Amalahu Rabbi Meir, so at this point Rabbi Meir told them, I told you so. He said, Amai loy diyaktu b'shma. Why did you not listen to me and derive from his name that the guy was going to be wicked? Amrule, so they said to him, Amai loy amata lamar. Why didn't you tell us? Meaning you should have told us to do this. You didn't really tell us. Amalu, he said to them, Eima da amri ana chashasha. But I wasn't sure. I was only concerned. Achzuki mi amri. I never told you the guy was definitely, I didn't know he was definitely going to do this. I was concerned. Anyway, what did they do? They've lost all their money. So this is what they did. Mashchu v'iluhu lechanusa. They followed him and they brought him up to like the pub. He went down the pub later on and they followed him. They looked at him. V'chazu talfachini asafme. And they found he had lentils on his mouth. They found he'd been eating lentils. They were looking carefully. He'd been eating lentils. Fine. And they came back. Azlu v'yahu v'siman l'debitu. They came back to the wife and said to her, obviously they plotted, they schemed, and they said, your husband told us to tell you that he's happy for you to give us our wallets back, and the sign he gave you today, he went to eat lentils today. And we would only know that if he'd given us the siman. So she gave him the wallets back, and they left. Azul Ihu, the guy came back from the pub, probably drunk. The Katle Le'itaten, he killed his wife in anger. He was so enraged. Now, are they responsible for that in some way? No, they're not responsible for that in any way. What did they do wrong exactly? They were robbed. And they worked out a scheme in which they found a way to get the money. Did they think that he was going to kill his wife? I don't know. Maybe they knew he would. But is that their responsibility? Is that their responsibility? Probably not. And therefore, in terms of indirect outcome, says Rav Zilberstein, clearly, indirectly, you are allowed to do things, he says, that even cause disproportionate, and that's the point here, disproportionate harm to the people who are trying to cheat you. Because in the case of the burglar, he broke his neck, that's disproportionate. In the case of the innkeeper, Nebuchadnezzar, he killed his wife, which is clearly disproportionate. Now, when it comes to direct intervention, everybody agrees that you're allowed to defend yourself, and that's a very famous sugya, which is Hababa Machteret, which I just want to touch on briefly in number 11. The Torah says very clearly a different case. If you confront the burglar, if sneakily the thief comes in and you find them in the night, the hukah, and you hit them and you attack them, vameit, and they die, ein lo damim. You are definitely not responsible. You're not responsible. And Rashi explains why. Ein lo damim. Ein lo ritzicha. That is not called murder. Hari hu kemet meikaro, because the guy was a dead man walking. Why? Kan limadta Torah im bala harkos. The Torah is telling you, if somebody comes to kill you, hashkein lahargo. Kill them first. Vezela harkhaba. And this person burgling your house definitely came to kill you. Shehari yodeyahu, because he knows full well. That no householder would see someone burgling a house and just hide in the room. They will confront him. The fikach al manat came by. Therefore, he comes with in understanding that he's going to be confronted. She'im yahamad bal hamamon, that if the owner were to confront him, kenegdo yargeno, that he has to be prepared to kill. And therefore, since you know he's coming with intent to kill, you are able to kill them first. And that is Paskin in Halacha, very clearly the Rambam says so, unless it's absolutely clear to you that the person didn't come with any kind of violent intent, and how will it ever be clear? The Gemara gives an extreme case. If it turns out that the burglar is the father, and the house belongs to the son, and they didn't realize it was their house, the son can assume that the father, God forbid, would never kill the son, because fathers wouldn't kill the son, says the Gemara. But if it's the other way around, you can't be too sure. If the father was the house and the son was the burglar, children don't always feel the same way about their parents as the parents about their children. But one way or the other, you're allowed to stand up and kill the guy. It doesn't have to be in that sense proportionate, because he didn't do anything to you yet. But you have to assume he's prepared to do to you. Now, again, this is not exactly the same as the case of the poison sandwich, because there's no confrontation here. This is a case of a direct confrontation, and the Torah says very clearly, you have to shoot first and ask questions later. Which will be an interesting case, because even in English law, I'm not sure that's true either. If somebody breaks into your farm, and you're standing with a shotgun in the top window there, and you scream at them, get out of my farm, and you shoot them, I think you'll get into quite a lot of trouble in English law and American law, etc. Now, in halacha, it's interesting. Do you turn around and say, well, I assume if they broke into my property, they're armed. And therefore, why should I wait till they come up to my bedroom? I'll shoot them first. That's an interesting question. One thing's for sure. In the parallel case, which we're not getting into now, of the roideif, what's a roideif? A roideif is somebody that you is chasing after another person, perhaps with innocent intent, but they're nevertheless being roideif after a person to kill them. I'll give you an example. Let's say an innocent case. Let's say there's a person hunting in the forest, and they're shooting deer, and they're training their gun to shoot this deer, and you're a bystander watching this, and you see with horror that actually this person, this hunter, is about to shoot a person by mistake. Maybe some guy with antlers on his head, on a stag night or something. I don't know, whatever. Sorry, that was poor. But you see that he's about to shoot the guy. You're allowed to shoot him. Look at the Rambam. Someone who is chasing another person and they have intent to kill them. Or they're going to kill them. Even if the Raidif was a small child, which obviously is not liable. That's the point here. We have a separate mitzvah to save the person being targeted. Miyada Raidif. From the hands of the Raidif. Afilu Banasha. Even if we have to kill the Raidif, shall a Raidif. And then he gives a case. But then he says, underlined, but if you can somehow shoot the roedef in the leg, or find a way to disable them, you shoot an arrow at them, or throw a stone at them, or scythe, or you throw a dagger and you don't kill them, and you chop off their hand, or you break their leg, or you can blind them and stop them from doing this, you must try first to give a proportional response in the roedef case. He says, and if you don't, if you just blaze in there with a shotgun and take the guy down when you didn't need to, then you're a murderer. So the stakes are very high for a roedef. Now, what exactly the difference is between a roedef and hababa machteres, there is debated. In hababa machteres, in the household, the big difference is he's in your house. He's broken into your home and presumably has an intent to defend himself in that way. In the other case, you're out there somewhere else. It's not your property, and it could be many different scenarios, and you have to be proportionate. But these are both cases of direct response in which you see sometimes proportionality is required and sometimes less so. Question?
Yeah, just in general, most of these cases are about stealing things.
Yes.
There's certain consumer reputation that all the laws are at home, and they're totally
different. Right. That's a very interesting case. If you know that somebody is about to reveal, somebody is about to press send on an email, well, someone has revealed it. Well, then it's too late. What can you do? You're doing trying to prevent the damage, not trying to get back at the people. Right.
Right.
So what are you asking? Yes.
There's very little that people can do to reveal.
Correct. There is something you can do at least.
Well, and you're encouraged to do
it. Right. It could be. It's interesting in the case that once the damage has been done, there's very little you can do, and you get into the whole question of taking revenge. Don't forget there is a Torah prohibition not to take revenge, not to bear a grudge, and how that works. Although that doesn't mean you can't defend yourself. Rabbi Eliashiv was asked by a father whose kid was kept getting beaten up in the playground in Cheder in Yerushalayim. He says, people keep coming to hit my kid. What's my kid meant to do? So Rabbi Eliashiv asked, hit them back. It's hard. Because that's not called taking revenge. That's not called bearing a grudge. That's called self-defense. That you're allowed to do. Taking a grudge and bearing a grudge and taking revenge is later on scheming in a way to do that. Now, this case of this poison sandwich, he doesn't even know who he was taking revenge against. He's trying to work out who the guy is. Let's talk about that right now, specifically. Haliteu l'rosha. Rav Zilberstein said, I think it's a mitzvah because you're allowed to take people who are wicked, you're allowed to help them be wicked. Where does he get that from? So here's a very interesting Mishnah number 14. This is a rather obscure case of Kerem, Revai, and Orla. What's Orla? People know what Orla is. The first 3 years of produce, you're not of a tree that you plant in the ground, you can't eat the produce. Do you want someone to put the air on, by the way? You all right? Some people are warm. Okay, fine. People are fine. Okay, good. It's machlokes at the moment. The first 3 years it's Orla. You can't eat it. The fourth year it's Kerem Revoy, which means that you'd have to take it to Yerushalayim, or you'd have to be paided, you have to redeem it. Back in the day when there was a base of Mikdash, etc., you take it, you'd eat it in Yerushalayim. Either way, you're not allowed to eat it here and now. So the Mishnah wants to do the following case. You have a field, Kerem Revoy or Orla, and people keep stealing from your field. Do you have to tell them, actually, what you're stealing from me is prohibited? For a different reason, because it's Orla. Or you can say to them, you know something? Forget it. Just, you know, let the guy steal. He's eating Orla. His problem. So look what it says in number 14. Kerem Revai Metzayin in Otto Bekoizes Adama. The Mishnah gives a certain siman that you have to put for Kerem Revai. V'shal Orla Becharatis. And Orla you have to give a signs with Charatis, some kind of a earthenware, whatever it is. You have to put a sign on the field that it's Orla, that it's Kerem Revai. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, one second. The Mad Verim Amorim, when does that apply? The Shvi'is. Only in the Shemitah year. What's different in the Shemitah year? Everyone can come in. The Shemitah year, the produce is Hefka. So since everybody anyway is allowed to come in your field and take from your produce, and that's legitimate, So then you have to warn them. But if it's not the Shemitah year, says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, why do you care? So it's all that, so they get a double Aveira. The Gemara in Bava Kama clarifies number 15, Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Madvar Mamurim, Bishvias. The Hefka Ninhu, because the food is Hefka. Aval Bashar Shnei Shavua, but during the rest of the seven-year sabbatical cycle, Halitehu L'Rosha V'Yomus. Let the wicked, feed it to the wicked person and let them die. The word Halitehu comes up with who? With Esav. Remember when Esav asks for Yaakov to give him the food, he wanted to shove it down his throat, like this is what you do to almost like a camel to force feed it. So obviously it's Chazal borrowing from Esav and saying, oh, the person steals, let them steal. Why should you help them by telling them it's Orla? Even though if you tell them it's Orla, they may not steal. The joke that people keep taking the milk out of the fridge. You have your milk in the fridge. So people keep it in the office, keep taking it out. People keep stealing your milk and they don't care. You write your name on it. They still keep them and steal the milk. So what do? You write, this milk is not Chalav Yisrael. Oh, no one's going to take the milk now. Okay, no one's going to take the milk now. Okay? Because, Geneva, yesh omrin, v'yesh omrin. Chalav Yisrael, I can't start up with that. So it could be that if you said to the guy it's Orla, then he would have stayed away. But no, Halitei L'Rosh V'Yomus. Rambam explains why. Number 16. Shaloi b'shnat ha-shmita. If it's not a shmita year, ain't sarich. He says you don't have to. Ain't sarich l'tzayin and l'fisha. Ain't rishus l'kol adam l'vlishot yado l'echol dava she'en shalom. Because they have no right to come into your field. U'misha ava v'achal har is a gazlan. This person is a gazlan. The ain lanu la'asot takana l'gazlan. It's not our business to make takanot to help thieves. Kedei shalo yikashel, that they shouldn't stumble. Vipnesha avon gezel chamor yoter. What they're doing is already worse than eating orla. They're stealing from another person, which is interesting. Chamor yoter says very clearly, why do you even have to help them? They're already doing something far worse. And very interestingly, other Meforshim take this even further. There are two tshuvas of the Radvaz I want to mention to you now. I didn't bring the actual tshuvas down. In one tshuva, the Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, who was in Egypt in the 16th century, he was asked the following. He was asked, somebody took a defendant to court claiming that they owed them money. So the claimant said, this guy owes me money, and he knew that he owed him money. And the court imposed a sanction that the defendant, who claims he doesn't owe anything, has to make a shavur chamur. He has to make a very serious oath on a Sefer Torah that he doesn't owe the money. And everybody thought, well, this is obviously, no one's going to do that. It's going to put the guy off. He's not going to do that. When it became clear that the guy was actually going to take a false oath on a Sefer Torah, so the claimant wrote to the rabbis and said to him, look, should I just drop the thing now? Even though he owes me the money, there's no question. But I don't want to be responsible for causing him to make a false oath, which is even worse. So the rabbis, not your problem. Let him make the oath. Even though it's obviously a very serious avera, you're not making him do that. Halitenu l'rosha v'yomus. He's going to do that. Let him do that. Okay? Another case, which is even more, I think, striking, is a man suspected his wife of committing adultery with a specific person, although he couldn't prove it. So what he did is he divorced the wife conditionally. He wrote her a conditional divorce that said you are not allowed to marry this particular guy afterwards. And if you do, the divorce is retroactively nullified. You think that's clever, huh?
Yeah.
So what happened is afterwards, so they divorced, and it became evidently clear that she was indeed moving in with this guy, and they were going to get remarried. And now he wrote to the Radvaz and says, oi, what have I done now? Because before I wasn't even sure if she was committing adultery. Now, if she moves in this with this guy, the divorce is nullified retroactively, and for sure she's committing adultery. Should I now issue, said the questioner, a second unconditional divorce, so we'll just make a clean break, finish the thing, and then she'll move in with a guy and at least she won't be committing adultery. Says the Radvaz, no, you have no responsibility to do that. Halitei l'rosh v'yomus. Since the chances are now from what she's doing that she was already having an affair with this guy, and since she's anyway prohibited to marry him because you're never allowed to marry the person that God forbid has an affair with. So now she's committing adultery again. She's already wants to break one thing, let her break another thing. And if you see over the page, in number 5, you'll see, page 5 rather, in number 17, you'll see the Me'iri and the other Meforshim go even further. Kazo Rav Me'iri. Habashar Shanim, back to the Orla cave, with other years, Hoyel v'nigiyasam Asura, since you're not allowed to touch the fruit, it doesn't belong to you, Ein Matakne le'ovri Avera, we don't make takanas for people who do Averas. Ele'im yigu mutav she'yishtar shubachet. We actually prefer it. Mutav, it's better. Do you see where Rav Zilberstein is coming from now? It's better that he should do another chet. But yochru davar ha'asa, we like it, we're happy that the guy is actually doing more Averas. Kagoin zeh halitele rosh v'yomas. And a lesser-known commentary on the Yerushalmi here, the Rash Cyrilio, who was in Greece in the 16th century, says actually at the end, we'll just read the source, came under Ein Rishus Lagad Bahem, since he can't really take the produce at all, Gazlinan Heim, because it's stolen, Halitena Rosh HaVeyomis, V'kol Hecha De'ike Isuri Tvei, and the greater the Issa that we get them to do, Adif Tvei, the happier we are, Kedeshi Yamut Mehera, because we'd rather they died quickly. So, what about Hochiyah Tochiyah? That's an interesting question. And the Chavos Yair kind of brings that up a little bit. No, he doesn't mention Hochiyah Tochiyah. If you know it's not going to work, the question is whether there's a mitzvah of Hochiyah Tochiyah. The question is, when can you know that it's not going to work? Maybe he already did Tochacha. Maybe he already did try to stop them from me, but they didn't listen. I suppose the guy with the poison sandwich wrote a note saying, whoever's taking my sandwich every day, please stop taking it, because it's all I have to eat for lunch. Not helping. But it's a good question. I hadn't thought of how that interplays. But here, the Rash Cyrilio says, actually, we'd like to get rid of them. The problem with this is, though, that Bidei Shamayim, we want them to somehow be responsible and let God take care of it. That doesn't encourage us to be vigilantes and do some of God's work on his behalf and help get rid of them even quicker. And therefore, they ask the Rav Zilberstein, that's fine when it comes to the Orla question, but it's not fine necessarily when it comes to this. And the Chavos Yair isn't even sure about the Orla question. I'm not going to read the whole of Source 19 as well, but the Chavos Yair writes there that, I don't understand, since when are we allowed to encourage people to do Averas? We don't do that. If they do them, they do them. But we don't put, you know, a thing in place or a stumbling block in people's way to try and get them to do the Averas. And he's very perplexed by this, and he says at the end, if someone can help explain this Gemara to me, I'll be very happy, because I really don't understand it, because who said that he would do the Avera of Orla, like the case of the Chalav Yisrael, right? Yeah. Even though the guy steals, maybe he doesn't want to do Orla. Why are you helping to trip the guy up? Maybe we should ask them to put the air on, because I can see more people wilting now. Does someone want to volunteer to ask them to put the air on? Yeah? Okay, thank you. You're on it. Excellent. So it's not straightforward. None of these sources give a very clear imperative, if you like, to help with the vigilante action that we've been talking about. And indeed, I want to bring you some sources now, just before we finish in the next 15 minutes, that kind of go the other way and move us more towards the position in American and English law, etc. You're not allowed to have on your land dangerous objects. Have a look at number 20. This is a principle that the Gemara quotes in Bava Kama, number 20. Rabbi Nathan Omer, minan shelo yigdal adam kelev ra betoich beito. You're not allowed to have a vicious dog in your house. Val yamit sulam ra'ua betoich beito. And you're not allowed to have a wobbly ladder in your house. Talmud Lama, the Torah says, lo yisasim damim beveitecho. Don't place blood on your home. Okay, so the Marashah asked a very interesting question. The Marashah is asking number 21 about Ligdol Kelev Ra, Vadai lo yegia hahezek lipnei beito. For sure, the kids in the house won't get injured by the dog, because the dog knows the kids and the kids know the dog. No one in the house is going to get injured by the dog. So who go Kelev Harai Mahem? Because the dog's used to them. Aval hu magadlo? Why has the guy got a dog in the house? According to the Gemara, Lishmirasoi min aganavim. To stop thieves getting in. Balayli, in the middle of the night. V'chein b'sulam ra'ua, so too with a wobbly ladder, yad'u bo b'nei beso. The people in the house know not to use that ladder, because, oh, that's the wobbly ladder, we don't use that ladder, that's just the one that was there to stop the thieves getting in. Nevertheless, says the Marashah, afal pikein ka'ama lo yisasim dam b'veisecha. And he says, you're not allowed, that source, he wants to say, is a clear source. This is not about the family, we're not worried the dog might bite the kids, or the kids will fall off the ladder, they know about that. We worry that the ganef might get bitten by the rabid dog, or the vicious dog, or that the ganef might fall off the ladder. That's also a problem. And that's where Rav Shlomo Zalman comes in and says, on this case of the case here of the, in Derech Eretz, in Maseches Derech Eretz, where he takes the ladder away, like I said before, we don't learn from that you're allowed to booby trap your house. we learn from that you're allowed to take any precautions necessary to stop yourself being robbed, but not to actually cause damage or injury to the robber. And in fact, the Rav Zilberstein says, okay, maybe that's true, and maybe in the case of the ladder, the thief should have checked that the ladder was there or the ladder wasn't there, and that's why it's okay. So they asked him, so what about the poison sandwich case? So he says, well, maybe the guy should have checked whether the sandwich was poisoned. He knew the guy was a chemistry student, and he should have thought maybe that would be. But you can see already that's a little bit of a, who checks whether the sandwich is poisoned if they steal a sandwich? Only people who are paranoid. But in this case, it wasn't so clear. And he said that could have been less of an issue with the poison sandwich, but he wasn't 100% clear. Rav Zvi Spitz, you should know, rules in the case of the washing line. He says that's okay. He rules that's permitted to loosen the washing line so that the burglar will fall through. But he says the case of the pits, that's not allowed. Why? Because in the case of the washing line, only somebody with malevolent intent would ever be damaged by that. But in the case of the pit, anybody could get damaged by that. And that's not acceptable. There's a very interesting case. I want to bring you two cases here that came up in the Meforshim, one in the Chavos Yair in the 17th century and one in the Barasham in the 19th century. So the first one's a little bit comical in a sense, but I'm sure it wasn't comical to the people involved. Look at number 23. Would someone mind just shutting the door at the back there? Sorry, I just a bit of an open door or a policy here. Number 23. Says the Chavos Yair, Chama Rabbanan Shehaya Lo Chanut. There was a particular rabbi that had a shop, Lifnei Petach Beito, in front of his house. B'chol Minei Kidneyas V'Zironim. And he sold seeds. Okay, that's what he sold. Kidneyas, beans, and seeds. V'Tarigola Shel Shechina Porchot Tamid Ala Chanut. And the next door neighbor's chickens were constantly flying in, or jumping in, V'Ochlot Mehem, and eating all the seeds. V'Avshei Frichan Kama Pamim, even though he chased them back many times, chozrot uporchot, they kept coming back and eating the seeds. V'kama pamim higid lebala tarnigoles. Many times this person warned the owners of the chickens. She yishmor tarnigolatav. Please keep your chickens in check. V'imi chazru v'yavo, and if they come back again, yakam v'yamiten, I'll hit them and I'll kill them, he says. V'lochash, and he didn't pay any attention. Pam achat, so what happened one time? She chazru v'baru v'achlu. They came and started eating the seeds, and the guy went nuts, basically. The hika balachanut achreim, the guy chased after them and started hitting the chickens. The harag ach mehem, and he killed the choice chicken. Okay? Hamufcheret, haomedet, ligdol beitzim, v'afrev roichim. His prized chicken that was designed to lay the best eggs and the best chicks got killed in this episode. Ubau ludin, so the guy next door, chutzpan, he sued the guy for killing his chicken. It was obvious to the person who owned the shop, the patur, he's obviously potter, he's obviously exempt from killing this chicken, mishneitamim, for two reasons. First reason, how many times did he warn him? This was not the first time this had happened. Don't we learn, Ovid inish din adavashe? And here's a principle we haven't seen yet today. Ovid inish din adavashe means you're allowed to take self-help remedies. You're allowed to take the law into your own hands when that's the only way you can protect yourself. Even if you're not suffering significant loss. So this guy expected to win his case. Obviously I'm not liable for the chicken. I warned the guy, the chicken shouldn't have been there. What could I do? Says the Chavos Yair, I actually found him liable. He had to pay for the chicken. Chayav imeni bedin. Ubikesh leida me'eza tam. Danantid afal pisha loy haiti mechuyav. And he said, I need to know why you found me guilty here. And even though I didn't need to tell him, the dayan doesn't need to go into all the details. Kibaba rotsam din, he's the one that came to the din. Mikol melefanai, mikol makam hodiv, I gave him the answers. And what he says is as follows. Avid inish dinah denafshei, what allows you to take self-help remedies is only when you're in danger of being injured. He says, not when you're in danger of having, when someone's coming to get you, then you can say, but when someone's animals are coming in, or when there's an indirect threat, he says at the end, when the behemoths are damaging you, they didn't even know, or they didn't intend it, then you're liable. So again, this limits a little bit the situation. The Marasham said, for the same reason, you can't put poison around your household if other animals are coming in, and they'll eat the poison and die, you are not allowed to do that. And he quotes the Chavos Yair, and he says that you're only allowed to take self-help remedies when someone themselves, willingly, knowingly, coming to harm you. But you can't just take action on your property. You can't say, it's my property, I can do whatever I like on my property. Lo nachon. If you set booby traps on your property and people get hurt, then that could be very much your responsibility. So Rav Zilberstein would say, well, this is different. The poison sandwich case, the guy's coming to get him. He's a bully. He's coming to get him. It's not just something which is shaloi barotzon, an unintended consequence. But these sources clearly say here that your rights on your own property are indeed limited. You can't just do anything you like. There are limits to what you can do. Finally, let me just look at one other issue, which is, okay, fine. Am I allowed to do on my property this, that, or the other? But at the end of the day, lo yisamod adam re'echa, don't I have an obligation to save people? Meaning, okay, he's a burglar. But he's probably a nice burglar. The guy has a wife and children at home. I'm gonna unscrew my washing line, and the guy's gonna have broken legs and be in hospital. What happened to lo yisamod adam re'echa? Do I not have an obligation to this person? And if I have an obligation to save him, then all the more so I have an obligation not to cause him to become injured and fall down into the stairwell. So that's something that we have to deal with at the end here, and we'll see if we can come to any conclusions. So the Rambam paskens this mitzvah as follows. It's a very interesting mitzvah. People don't talk about it that much, but he says in number 25, Kol hayochel lahatzil, if you can save somebody, v'lo hitzil, and you didn't save them, oiver al, you are breaking the mitzvah of lo yisamod adam re'echa. Similarly, if you see your friend drowning in the sea, or listim ba'im alav, or there are robbers, highwaymen coming towards them, or chaya rabbi alav, or you see there are wild animals approaching, v'yochol ha'tzilo, and there's a way that you can save them, hu ba'atmo, you can save them, or she'yizkor acherim, or you can call the police, you can hire someone, you can send somebody in, v'ha'tzilo, v'lo hitzil, and you didn't do so, or she'sham agoyim, or moisrim, mechashvim, or you heard people plotting, alav, to kill the guy, ra'al, evil against the person, or tonim lo pach, or v'lo gala oizin chaveira v'hoidiyoi, okay, and you don't warn them, you don't give them warning that this is coming, or, another case, shiada begoi or ba'ana shehu kovela chaveiro, v'yochel lefai, so you know that there's someone imprisoning, maybe even torturing another Jew, and you have the ability to intervene and get them out, and you don't do that. All of these cases, you have an obligation to actively intervene, which, by the way, is more so than in secular law. In most jurisdictions, I'm pretty sure this is the case in England, although I stand to be corrected, if you walk past a river and there's someone drowning in the river, and you do not jump in the river to save them, you cannot be taken to court and sued for some kind of negligent action for having failed to intervene. Okay, if you're a lifeguard, then yes, you clearly have a duty of care to intervene, and if you don't intervene, that's your responsibility. But if you're not a lifeguard, and you don't jump in, can the family of the person who drowned say, hey, you were walking past Wyden, I'm going to sue you for damages? No, I don't think they can. On the contrary, if you do jump in to try to save them, and in trying to save them, you actually cause them harm and damage, then you risk being sued, and there are all sorts of Good Samaritan laws that will say, if you're trying to help people, then, you know, we're going to exempt you from liability. In halacha, that's not the case. In halacha, in many situations, although not all, we'll see, you have an active obligation to jump in and actually intervene to save the person. But the question is, which people? Which people? Who is re'echa? Le'samod adam re'echa. So look at what the Rambam says in number 26. He says, before you get too carried away with this, and think that you have to jump in and save everybody in the world, there are all sorts of people that you don't have to. First of all, he starts with minim, and this kind of segues into next week's shir, like 2 weeks from now. Minim are heretics. Okay? Certain kinds of heretics. Behem oivdi avodah zorim Yisrael, or Jewish idolaters who serve idol worship. Or ha oise averus lahachis, or Jewish people who do averus lahachis. Dafka is the best English word I can find to translate lahachis. Okay? Afilu achel nevela or lava shatnas lahachis. Even if they just eat treif or wear shatnas lahachis, what would that be? That would be somebody who, there's a piece of kosher food and a piece of treif food, and the kosher food tastes much better. They'll dafka eat the treif food because it's treif. That's lahachis. Most people would just eat the kosher food if it tastes better, or whichever food tastes better. Okay, that's the teavon, but this is lahachis. Harizemin, that person is also a heretic on a certain level. the apikorisim, and certainly apikorisim, which we'll talk about next time, hein shekofrim b'Torah b'nevuah, people who deny Torah, who deny the nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu Yisrael, Jewish people we're talking about, not only do you not have to save them, but mitzvah lahorgan. It's a mitzvah to try and give them a nudge into the river. Now, this is not the halacha, please don't get carried away. You are not allowed to take the law, leaving aside the law of the land, which is the law. You're not allowed to start nudging people into the river just because you think that they are people who do averes lahaches. But they're not in this category. And then he has a middle category, which I've missed out, where he talks about shepherds. Shepherds get a very negative press, because they constantly shepherd their flocks on other people's land without any concern for who they're stealing from. I missed that out, because there probably aren't many shepherds here. If there are, please speak to me afterwards and I'll help you, give you some guidance. Aval Yisrael, he says, but a Jew, Bal Averus, who does Averus? Not all of us do Averus, right? Nobody's perfect. She'eino Omed Berisho Tamid, but they're not constantly doing Averus. Eloise Averus Lahanis Asmo, they do Averus because it feels good. They don't daven because they can't be bothered, and they eat treif because it tastes good, and they just do what they do. Kagoyin oichel nevelis ha-te'avon. They eat treif food because it tastes good. Mitzvah lahatziloi. Them you absolutely have to save. V'otzalam ododam. You're not allowed to stand by while they're suffering. So the fact that somebody does averas does not in any sense exempt us from saving them, unless they happen to be in this category of intentional, willful, dafka, and we'll have to talk about who that is, or even more problematically, apikorisim. Who are the apikorisim amongst us? Are there any such people? Says the Rambam, anyone who doesn't believe in the 13 ikrim. Well, the world is full of Jewish people who don't believe in the 13 ikrim. Does that mean that everyone's an apikoris? That's an advert for the next year in 2 weeks' time. The Shulchan Aruch is not quite as strident as the Rambam. Look at number 27. Mishahu avaryan lahachis. Somebody who does averus lahachis. Afilu lemitzvah achad. Even one mitzvah. Kagan she'oichel nevela. Like they eat treif. Hechad eshchiach basa kasheru. When they could get kosher food. Asul if doisa im nishba. Now you're not allowed to redeem them if they're taken captive. Because as the Rambam said, you don't have to save those people. Aval, says the Rambam, avaryan leteavon. Somebody who does averus because it's pleasurable. Now what did the Rambam say? You do have to save them. Says the Ramah, Ein issa b'davar im reitzim l'fdoisa. It's not a problem if you like to save them. Aval ein m'chuyavim b'kach, but you really don't have to. That's very interesting. You can walk on by, he says, like the civil law would say, you don't have to get involved. You can, maybe it's even good in some ways, but you don't have to. And this seems to be the halacha that is applied in different situations. The Pitzchei Tshuva has a long piece in number 28 where he said that the Chavas Yair, we saw just before again, there's a bit of a theme here. The Chavas Yair comes a lot on this issue of trying to protect people even if they are doing averas. There was a celebrated case in the 17th, 16th century there where of a Jewish thief, a well-known, notorious Jewish thief that was caught finally by the non-Jewish authorities, and they were going to kill him. They were going to execute him. And the Chavos Yair said, we have to, get the community together and get this guy out. We have to do Pidyon Shvuim. We have to free this guy. And the Pitzchei Tshuva says, I don't understand. Why do we have to get involved and free this guy? This guy is a Chilul Hashem. This guy brings the Jewish people into disrepute. Why would we have to intervene? The Chavos Yair says, no, I think we do. In this particular situation, this guy is not one of the people who is exempted from our mitzvah of loisam od adam riecho. So you can see, even on this issue, there is a lack of absolute clarity. And if you transfer it back into the burglar, do I have a responsibility to the burglar who keeps stealing from people's houses to save them and not to harm them? So it sounds from the Shulchan Aruch, the answer is, well, not really. I don't have an obligation. This person burgles. He may even be a regular. I don't think he's lahachis. I don't think he's breaking into people's houses because he wants to cause them pain and anguish. He's breaking in because he wants to steal their stuff. But still, even so, even if it's a te'avon, says the Shulchan Aruch, I'm not sure you have an obligation to save him. Yes?
Are we talking about sins by reputation or people in the act of
sinning? Well, this is where you can prove that the guy actually did it. It's not just that we think that the guy did it, we're not sure that he did it. And even if after the case, it's not in the act of doing it. That's Ababa Machtara that we saw. If he's in the act of doing it, then really all the bets are off. He's a dead man walking, and you're halachically allowed. Yeah, but what he did wasn't in the act. He did it in advance, and afterwards he has to decide, am I going to give the antidote? An interesting shiloh would be, is the kid obligated to give the antidote? Which is an interesting question. Oh, so then you say, like, Samad Adam Riecha. But then you're going to ask, is a guy who constantly bullies other children considered an avarion lahachis or an avarion lateyavon? So you can say he's just a stupid kid. So if it's just a kid, then you're not going to start poisoning everyone's sandwiches. The guy will hopefully do tshuva when he's older, etc. But it's not so straightforward. And I brought you in the last source in number 29. I'm not going to go through it in depth. But various Jewish people were appointed by the government in the times of the Tanaim, to catch thieves and hand them over to the Romans. And they were taken to task and said, that's not your job to do the Romans' dirty work for them. And they said, well, I'm just removing the thorns from the field. These people are anyway are bad. Why would you care? No, let HaKadosh Baruch Hu remove the thorns from his own field. They said, your job is not to be a vigilante in that sense. Where does that leave us with the poison sandwich? Well, with a lot of very interesting sources, I think the consensus of opinion was not like Rav Zilberstein, that the guy probably should not have poisoned the sandwich for any number of reasons, whether it's loisam or adam riecha, or whether in fact that you have to take proportional action in different ways. But nevertheless, Rav Zilberstein stuck by his guns, and if that ever comes up again, in terms of if you're thinking of booby trapping your house, I suspect it's illegal under Israeli law as well, although I don't know that. But if you're thinking of going to the Beis Din, then take this source sheet with you and learn it carefully in advance. Okay? Next week I'm not here, but in 2 weeks, please God, I will be here again.